Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of July 13th, 2015. Today, we're happy to be joined by our frequent guest, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing very, very well. Very well indeed. So, here's a little history lesson, D.R. Mm-hmm. In 2008, just before the financial crash, actually, it was August of 2008, just before the financial crash. Mm-hmm. The state of Massachusetts passed a law called the Global Warming Solutions Act. It usually goes under the name GWSA here in Massachusetts, the Global Warming Solutions Act. And it is, it's of interest to, of course, people in Massachusetts, but I think as a model for people in other states. Right? It's kind of an mm-hmm. interesting topic for people across the country because I think Massachusetts is cutting some new ground here. Under the Global Warming Solutions Act, as it happened, the state committed to a 25% reduction in greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide, by the year 2020, and is mandated to get to 80% reduction by 2050, the classic sort of Bill McKibben goal. There's going to mm-hmm. be a 2030 intermediate goal. The year 2030, we'll have another goal. But there's a goal right in front of us now that the state has to cut its greenhouse gas emissions. One of the ways to do that, of course, is to clean up the electric supply grid, right? Mm-hmm. So here in Massachusetts, we've done a pretty good job of killing off coal plants. Right? Down at Brayton Point is going away. Salem may turn into a gas plant. Mount Tom is on its last legs. All this stuff. Mm-hmm. We've done a lot of good things. But we still need electricity. And this week, the Baker administration introduced a law that in fact is similar to a law that the previous Patrick administration had introduced, which mm-hmm. requires electrical utilities in the state of Massachusetts and in other states in New England, requires them to purchase hydropower from Quebec Hydro up in Canada. Right? Mm-hmm. And of course, hydropower is clean energy. Did you see that, DR?
Yes, there was a great report by the Associated Press on July the 9th stating that, quote, the bill submitted to the state Senate requires Massachusetts utilities to work with the Department of Energy Resources to pursue long-term contracts for bringing hydropower to the state. The governor called the measure a critical step in reducing greenhouse gas emissions while also helping ratepayers by providing a cost-effective alternative to fossil fuels like coal and oil, unquote. Of course, when we think of cost-effective alternatives to fossil fuels like coal and oil, we think of solar power and offshore wind. But unfortunately, the Secretary for Energy and Environmental Affairs was quoted in a July 9th report in the Boston Globe as saying that, quote, the sun's not always shining and the wind's not always blowing, unquote, which I thought was an unfortunate remark because, of course, as Peter Sinclair of ClimateCrux.com has noted, there's no such thing as a power source that never fails. Every power source is by definition intermittent, so the preference should be to be as clean as possible. And I think there was a great op-ed by Ann Berwick, was a former energy official in the Patrick administration a couple of weeks ago in the Boston Globe, saying that the best bet is offshore wind. Not to dismiss hydro, but wind and solar are your best bang for the buck. Even though it appears that there are some contrary views on the part of some of the officials in the Baker administration.
Well, I guess what I want to do is unpack the whole question a little bit. So mm-hmm. people who may not know should understand that Hydro-Quebec is a huge hydroelectric system up in the northern part of the province of Quebec, which mm-hmm. It turns out it has its own environmental impacts, right? They're flooding Indian lands, flooding lots and lots of places to build these dams. But it mm-hmm. is certainly true that the power is green, and no doubt about it. And I would just so that all my friends out there know, Governor Baker is doing the right thing by trying to address the Global Warming Solutions Act and get our carbon emissions down. We can disagree about the details, but I give him credit for doing something and reintroducing this bill. Anyway, the green power that would then allow Massachusetts to reduce its carbon emissions, its electrical carbon emissions, because you don't need any coal plants, that green power conceivably could come from Hydro-Quebec. Hydro-Quebec has its own downsides, plus the fact that you have to now build new electrical lines to bring the power from Quebec down into the New England area, right? And that's almost as controversial as building wind turbines on top of mountains, right? Because nobody wants to see power lines across their mountains. So I guess what my point is that, you know, good for Governor Baker for trying to do something. I think that it's better to be debating about what kind of clean energy we should have than about, you know, should we have clean energy or dirty energy. I guess, and I think you were sort of hinting at it, DR, that if we import clean Canadian energy, we starve and stunt the local green energy industry. Right, we lessen the need for wind turbines here in the state. And again, to the governor's credit, evidently wind turbine, local wind and solar panels get to count in this this total accumulated requirement of purchasing from Hydro-Quebec. So if, say, magically Cape Wind came back online, that could be thrown into the pile and they'd have to buy fewer megawatts from Hydro-Quebec. But it's a tough call. It certainly is a tough call, right?
It is. And, to be fair, it has been pointed out by the Boston Globe and others that former Governor Patrick was also quite fond of hydropower. But, with all the controversy surrounding the Baker administration, apparently, how shall we say, being less than energetic about maximizing solar energy's potential, and also being, you know, not as energetic as you would figure one would be logically about the potential of offshore wind. It just seems unusual that there seems to be this sort of I guess preferential treatment, for want of a better phrase, for hydropower versus offshore wind and solar. I mean, we need all the clean energy above, so to speak, and if there was an equal amount of push for hydropower, offshore wind and solar, that would be wonderful. But to preference A versus B and C strikes me as a bit unusual, shall we say?
I think that the administration. In the person of, I guess his name is Mark Beaton,
Matt Beaton.
His point is that, well, Hydro-Quebec is cheap, relatively speaking, compared to green energy, and we must, of course, have the cheapest power. I don't know if that's an effective argument. Given the circumstances that we're in and the opportunity to grow the state's economy through the development of local green energy, maybe even at a premium, I don't know. I agree with you. It would be a much stronger bill that I would support much more if there was a more aggressive acceptance of renewable energies and, say, lifting the cap on the the solar panel thing, right? That whole thing is still floating away and no one's done anything about it.
Exactly. And it's so fascinating to see how on a federal level you see this push by the Obama administration to expand accessibility for solar. And you see efforts by some members of the U.S. Senate to expand accessibility for solar. But in a state that has been such a vanguard for clean energy, you seem not to have that same level of passion and aggression and vision in terms of expanding the benefits of solar. And leadership in governors is something that we all admire. I mean we're talking about this so soon after the leadership expressed by Governor Nikki Haley of South Carolina and having the Confederate flag finally taken down in South Carolina. The same vision that is demonstrated by taking the Confederate flag down, why don't we have that same vision in terms of putting clean energy up? That's what I think we would all like to see.
Well, I mean, I guess you know, talking about it, it seems that the Baker administration is doing this very, I guess, narrow cost calculation. I guess I don't, at the top of my head, know the relative cost of Hydro-Québec versus, say, Cape Wind. Because you say, well, okay, if you like Hydro-Québec, why don't you resuscitate Cape Wind and we'll build that too, right? Mm-hmm. That would be a sop to a lot of people. The whole question of costs of the cost of electricity as being the overriding factor versus the opportunity, as I said, to build a new economy and the need to stay ahead of this, stay ahead of the climate problem.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going cutting both ways on this bill. It was just announced yesterday or today, right? It's a new thing, and it's almost in many ways identical to what Governor Patrick proposed that was voted down at the end of the last November or so, right?
Yeah, so the end of the last legislative session. But when you bring up the issue of costs, you know, as the old saying goes, you never want to be the sort of person who knows the price of everything and the value of nothing. And when people talk about the cost of pursuing offshore wind and the cost of pursuing solar, what about the cost of not doing it? What about the cost of not maximizing the potential of a clean energy economy? I mean, why would you not want to have your state be the undisputed clean energy capital of the country?
Take the Global Warming Solutions Act as an excuse to do the right thing, right? Exactly. And of course, I don't think we talked about it. We didn't talk about it last week, but the EPA has published a report pointing out exactly what you say, that the cost of inaction is much larger than the cost of action against climate change.
Exactly. And why would you not want to have your state win the bragging rights contest when it comes to clean power? That's the way I see it.
It's what we got to do is have enough people mention it in conversation with their neighbor, with their crazy uncle.
Exactly.
So we got the Global Warming Solutions Act. I mean, it is heartening to see some kind of discussion, so we'll give Governor Baker a chit for that. But on the other hand, it could be a lot better, Mr. Baker.
Mm-hmm.
The other interesting thing that came along is something else that we've talked about. So I used to live in a town called West Roxbury. It's one of the suburbs of the old style suburbs of Boston. A lot of houses side by side, kind of a pretty place. A few months ago, a gas line company wanted to build a gas pipeline through West Roxbury, right there, which, of course, upset the people there because it's actually fairly dense. And the pipeline, as I remember, was going to be routed past a quarry where they do active explosions, right?
So, exactly.
Okay, what could possibly go wrong? But anyway, long short of it is that, tell me, what happened up in West Roxbury, DR?
Well, earlier this month, Spectra Energy Corporation, the company that wants to build this fracked gas pipeline, filed a federal lawsuit against the city of Boston, claiming that the city would not sell the easements or right of way that the company needs to build the pipeline. According to Adam Gaffin of UniversalHub.com, what the Spectra Energy Corporation is claiming is that when the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission approved the pipeline's route from Westwood into West Roxbury, that somehow automatically gave Spectra Energy the right to get these permits, to get the easements, and therefore, because the city is still saying that, you know, we need to do some due diligence to make sure this is the wisest idea, the city is now filing a federal lawsuit claiming that they, under a quirk in federal law and federal natural gas law, under that quirk in that law, they have the right to these easements under eminent domain. Yes, a private corporation getting eminent domain rights, so therefore they're taking
from
the
city
to
of Boston
court. Exactly. Right. Exactly. It is like they're trying to seize power. You know, you think of all these people who complain about, you know, about entities trying to seize power. Here you have entity essentially claiming they have divine right to the easement, so they're trying to go to federal court to try to get a court to recognize that divine right of kings they're claiming.
So tell me, I know that the folks in West Roxbury were quite active in opposition to this this pipeline. Do you think that stiffened the spine of the administration? And do you think that's why they are not the administration? What the Walter administration in Boston? Do you think that sort of got their attention and said, "Well, we better take a second look at those licenses," or do you think they would have done this anyway?
I think they're still going to take a look. I don't think they're going to back down because there's so much community pressure. A lot of city councilors, Congressman Stephen Lynch, a lot of people have weighed in basically saying that this is a bad idea, and it looks like they're going to go through this fight. Adam Gaffin also reported that there's growing civil disobedience around the Spectra pipeline, and there's a group called Resist the Pipeline that is basically saying that if the federal courts clear a path for this pipeline, they will engage in civil disobedience to make sure it does not go forward. Because let's face it, you know, people talk about a booming economy. No one wants a boom, you know, when you're dealing with this sort of, I mean, seriously, the combination of natural gas and dynamite, it's just not going to work well. You know, you talk about they're filming the Ghostbusters movie, the Ghostbusters remake in Boston. I mean, there's going to be a real life explosive multi-million dollar, you know, blockbuster, a literal, you know, busting of blocks, of city blocks, if something goes badly, if they build that pipeline in West Roxbury.
DR, you've encapsulated the whole issue again, as only you can. Well, I guess we got to leave it there. Let me tell our listeners, our beloved listeners, that they can check out the links to most of what we've talked about at our blog. It's a massclimateaction.wordpress.com. You can leave a comment there. You can check out all the details of the things we spoke about. You can find the blog on our Facebook page, @MassClimateAction. And you can listen to the show from there by clicking through to the blog. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher. You can find us on iTunes by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. And if you subscribe to us there, it improves our visibility. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. Thank you very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
And we'll talk to you all again soon. Take care and bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us, and until next time, be green.
Very cool.